This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Love it when we can help break news here on Civic Media. We're going to jump right in this afternoon, folks, with no further introduction, which is rare for me. Usually I like to tell you what we got going on the show today, but I'm going to save that for a little later because my special guest right now is Professor Charles Franklin from Marquette University Law School. Their pollster extraordinaire, Marquette, just released just minutes ago, it became public. Their newest poll that has just been out in the field. This is the last poll before we will go to the polls for the actual tally of votes. Welcome, Professor Franklin. What can you tell us about where Wisconsin sits in these critical presidential, Senate, and congressional elections?
Well, I think people will be shocked to learn that it's a very close election.
Shocked, I say.
Yes. In the presidential race, we have it at a one-point Harris lead, 50-49, with likely voters. That includes people who are initially undecided, but we ask if you had to choose, what would you do? When we let those people stay undecided, it's still a one-point lead, 48-47, with 5% undecided. I think that 5% is worth noting because that's a lot bigger than the 1 point separating the two candidates. And how those people make up their minds over the next 6 days, who to vote for or if to vote, that's easily enough to sway this race. Also, the margin of error for the poll is 4.4 percentage points. So a 1 point lead with a 4 point margin of error certainly means we don't have any clear indication about the lead. When we look at the Senate race, it's a 2 point lead for Tammy Baldwin, 51-49. Or with undecideds, it's 48-45 with 7% undecided. So in both of these races, the undecideds are enough to tip the balance. We'll see which way they tip in about 6 days from now.
I appreciated your statement, Professor Franklin, to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that it should not surprise anyone if Donald Trump wins, and it should not surprise anyone if Kamala Harris wins. I appreciate you pointing out this tight race. Just because one or the other side wins doesn't mean that something bad happened in our election. It means it's a tight race with people voting in great numbers for both candidates. Speaking about these undecideds, do you have a sense from the polling about who are these low propensity voters? Are these people who don't really a party affiliate? Who are they? Why are 5% seems like a lot?
Yeah, it is, especially after all this campaign. But they are people who are conflicted in ways that make a lot of sense. Mm. So people that dislike both candidates, that's about 9% of voters now. And those folks, over 40%, say they haven't made up their minds. They're undecided about how to pick the lesser of the two evils as they see it. Another group is independents. About 21% of them are undecided. Makes sense. They're not partisans by definition. And finally, Republicans who are conflicted over Donald Trump. About 13% of Republicans have an unfavorable view of Trump. That's down from 30% a year ago, by the way. But that 13% is really troubled. Again, 42% of them are undecided. Of those who've made up their minds, about 4 or 5% more voting for Harris than for Trump. But it's clear that almost half of them just are saying they haven't made up their minds at this point.
So based on your experience, especially given the polling that you have done over the 16, 20, and now 24 cycle, Professor Franklin, I'm curious, do you have any sense, statistically based or instinctually based, and you can certainly distinguish between the two, if the undecided voters may be more susceptible, or whether these, what I'm going to call relatively minor media blips that are happening right here at the end, may have some sort of outsized impact simply because people are waiting until the last second. We can think of, Kamala Harris today disclaiming Joe Biden's apparent reference to some set of Trump voters as garbage, or the explicitly racist jokes told at Madison Square Garden. Do you expect them to have some sort of impact or sway?
Yeah, this is in an extremely close race. You worry about any event could tip the race a little bit. What I can tell you, though, is in 2016, when the Comey letter came out about Clinton's email server on the Friday a week before the election, we saw in the exit polls, those people who said they decided in the last week broke heavily for Trump, giving him over 60% of their votes. Those people in 2020 who decided in the last week broke almost as heavily for Joe Biden at the end. So I think the main lesson here is it's really unpredictable which way late deciders go. A big event might tip them uniformly, but it's just awfully hard to know precisely because they're conflicted and they're having so much trouble making up their minds.
How do the third party candidates fit in, especially in the presidential race, Charles?
Yeah, in the presidential race, they're doing a little better than they did a month ago, which is a little surprising. A total of about 9% say they'll vote for a third party candidate. For Kennedy, that actually tipped up a little bit to 5% for him from 3% a month ago. The others didn't move very much. Usually the third party candidates drop off, and that's what was happening until this month's poll. As of late September, they'd continued to decline. I think they reflect this still difficult choice that people feel of those who don't like either candidate, those who are unhappy with the Biden record, but also unhappy with Donald Trump. Those kinds of conflicts are driving some people into the third parties. Also, there are people who are genuinely just anti-Democrat and anti-Republican who are looking for a third party that they think would reflect their values better than the major parties.
Very briefly, setting aside those undecided voters that are moving towards third party candidates, has your polling or experience indicated to you that those third party voters understand very clearly that their third party vote is effectively robbing them of the opportunity to weigh in one way or the other with one of the candidates that will win the election?
I think that became very clear after the 2016 election, when 5.5% voted for third party candidates. But 4 years later, only 1.5% voted for third party candidates. I think that was a lesson that in a really close race, voting for a third party may reflect what you want, but it may also tip the race. And we saw that actually from 2000 yes. to 2020, 2004, the third party vote dropped off a lot. But 2016 is 8 years ago. So people under 30 generally didn't vote in that election. It's a fading memory at this point, and we'll see where the third party vote really ends up next week.
Very briefly, I know you have to go, Charles. Of those undecided, what do you think candidates could do to convince them? Or is this just a point where these people have to make up their minds? I mean, is there some one or two things that's preventing folks from deciding?
I think the candidates have already said and done almost everything they could do. Outside events or a flub of some sort could tilt it a little bit. But I'm really just seeing this conflict between people's partisanship and how they see the candidates, and that's just a real difficult thing for people to cross over and vote for the other party if they dislike their party's nominee, or they don't like the record of the party, or they disagree with the party on issues. So people are just in a tough spot for that.
Thank you so much. That's Professor Charles Franklin of Marquette University Law School, the polar extraordinaire, the guy that knows all the statistics. Thanks so much, Charles. Really interesting stuff there, folks. If you want to get your two cents in on these most recent poll reactions and results, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I'm going to give you my reactions right now. I get it. And the thing, as I've been listening to network coverage, and a lot of the network coverage is, of course, focused on these undecided or independent or swing or low propensity voters. And they've got interviews that they've been running of these folks. And the theme that I seem to hear most frequently, especially from conservative and Republican women who are self-identifying as undecided, is something along the lines of, I'm a traditional conservative, and so I don't like Kamala Harris's policies, but Donald Trump is an unacceptable candidate. He is a bad person. Something along these lines. Not my language, theirs. And the thing that occurs to me is, I hope if you are out there and you are one of these undecided voters, and you think that Kamala Harris doesn't match up enough with your policy preferences, I ask you, go to the Washington Post. They've got a policy quiz that you can take. It removes the D's and the R's from the policies, and you go strongly agree to agree. We'll put that poll in our show notes for today. I challenge you to take that poll. See where you land. Do you actually agree more with Kamala Harris's policies than Trump's? I ask you to spend the additional 15 minutes looking at the 16-page policy proposal Donald Trump put together. 16 pages. That's the platform from the RNC. Versus the hundreds of pages of policy proposals. You don't have to read them all. They got an executive summary section that you can find at Kamala Harris's website. There is also in the New York Times a side-by-side comparison of both candidates on the most important policy questions organized by subject matter. We'll put both of those links in our show notes. You can find those at civicmedia.us. And you can check it out. So if you think, gosh, Donald Trump's bad guy, don't like him, not a good person, but I think I like his policies more, go check yourself. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're going to come back with David Marsteller, candidate in the 22nd Assembly District. You want to pay attention to this one, folks. Keep it locked. Coming up next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I need freedom too. I break chains all by myself. Won't let my freedom ride in. Hey, I'ma keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Back to back today. So we got about 8 minutes. So don't be alarmed by the pace. You're going to want to get in what you want to say. I'm going to start out by... Welcome, y'all. Welcome back, Wisconsin. Welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My next guest, his name is David Marsteller. He is the Democratic candidate for the 21st Assembly District. Welcome, David. I want to make sure that you can hear me and the listeners can hear me. Am I good to go? Good to go. Okay. Welcome, David. This is one of the toss-up districts. We got new maps. Jesse Rodriguez has won in the past, your opponent, by like razor-thin margins. You can flip this district. Why should voters vote for you and not your opponent?
Voters should vote for me because I have sound policy ideas. I am a number one advocate for affordable, accessible health care. having survived a heart transplant, which was made possible by the Affordable Care Act. I had a pre-existing condition, which my brother passed away of in 2003. And as I got more and more ill, insurance company said, we can no longer cover you because you have a pre-existing condition. I lost my job because I was in the hospital so much. Mm. I was able to find a part-time job that allowed me to afford the Affordable Care Act, and it literally saved my life. So I'm here 6 years later running for office to advocate for other Wisconsinites to have access to affordable health care, because it's a right and it shouldn't be a privilege.
Yeah, the human dignity requires health care, period, full stop. And we should make it easier, not harder, more affordable, not less, for every single Wisconsinite to access affordable health care. Your opponent has had the opportunity to expand Badger Care here in the state of Wisconsin and yet hasn't done so. Is that part of your plan to help Wisconsinites access health care? Is the expansion of what we call Badger Care here in the state, which will end up saving Wisconsin taxpayers billions of dollars?
That is absolutely part of my platform, to expand Medicaid and Badger Care. And it will save Wisconsin billions of dollars.
Yeah, what else do you plan to do to work on healthcare for folks in Wisconsin?
Well, what we need to do is we need to reinvest with the University of Wisconsin system, which has been starved for 14 years, so that we can train and retain the best doctors that we can have in our state. We need to train them and retain them in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's no doubt.
We need to make a healthcare atmosphere in Wisconsin that will attract the best providers from across the country that want to come to Wisconsin to practice, because it's a good place to practice.
Couldn't agree with you more, David. And I think such a key piece of this when we talk about healthcare is freedom to choose the healthcare that is best for us, whether you are a man or a woman. Where do you stand on reproductive freedoms, David?
On reproductive freedoms, I trust women. That choice is not to be made by politicians in Madison or in Washington, D.C. Those healthcare decisions are to be made by women and their healthcare providers, full stop.
Couldn't agree with you more on that one. I know that you've also pointed out as part of your platform lowering costs for Wisconsin families. Tell me more about that, David.
Well, what we need to do is we need to look at our property tax issues, because they just keep going up exponentially every year. I mean, I know ours in my own home, which went up $3,900 this year, but the assessment, you know, did not go up didn't go up that much. Property taxes keep going up and up and up. And I think Wisconsin, during the revenue sharing, Milwaukee County got a raw deal on that. Two for everyone else, one for us.
Yes. I when we think about property taxes, one of the things, having dealt with property taxes, both when I worked in the city attorney's office and as corporation counsel for Milwaukee County, that I try to point out to people is the more corporate property tax carve-outs you see in state law, and listen, the corporate interests in Wisconsin have lobbied the Republican-controlled legislature, especially back when Scott Walker was still in the state house, for all kinds of property tax carve-outs. And as Republicans literally gave away the farm in terms of property tax carve-outs for large businesses and corporations and the biggest corporate agricultural businesses, what that did is it simply shifted property tax burdens from corporations and large businesses and commercial developers onto the backs of small family homeowners. That is what happened. I think there were something like 6 or 7 massive carve-outs that got passed under the Republican-controlled legislature and during the Scott Walker administration. Exactly to your point, David. I'll just give you a moment, sir, to address voters here in the 21st Assembly District. And by the way, we broadcast out of Radio Park here in Racine, and I drive down and I see all the signs, lots of signs for you, my friend, David Marstel, our candidate for the 21st Assembly District. Talk to the voters and tell them why a vote for you is a vote for Wisconsin families come this November 5th.
A vote for me is a vote for Wisconsin families, because I will tackle the healthcare issue. I will tackle the reckless and drunk driving epidemic in Milwaukee County by increasing the penalties. I will tackle crime by investing in adequate and competent police training and retention of the best officers we can get. And I will support women's rights to choose.
So,
and I just think,
go ahead, David.
As a Wisconsinite, I am for the people of Wisconsin, and I will advocate all I can do to better the lives of the residents of Wisconsin and the residents of Assembly District number 21.
I really appreciate that, folks. That's David Marsteller, candidate for the 21st Assembly District. Listen, when I look at candidates, David, folks that have been through the meat grinder of the U.S. healthcare system, who have been without health insurance, who have seen family members harmed by their lack of access to affordable, top-notch healthcare, I trust people like that because you know what it's like because you have been there. And so is your family. My thanks to you, David, for running for this seat. Best of luck to you. You can find out more about David Marsteller. You can go to marstellerforwisconsin.com. That's marstellerforwisconsin.com. Turn out and vote. The 21st Assembly District up for grabs, folks. Let's give it back to the middle class and hardworking Wisconsin families with a vote for David this November 5th. I'm Maggie Dawn. We'll be back with Sounds Like Change with Emily's List after these brief messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Hey, Sarah.
How are you?
Good. Oh, we're on. Hi, Sarah, and welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Wednesday, though it feels like Friday, but it is Wednesday, and that means it is time for Sounds Like Change. Today, we've got Emily's List Director of Strategic Communications, Sarah Spain. Welcome back to the show, Sarah. Great to see you.
Thank you. We are 6 days till the election. So I'm like, what day is it?
What day is it? I know it. They've all kind of blended into one. It's mostly like an hour countdown, like clicking through my head. Like I'm thinking of it in those terms now. Coming right up on us, Kamala Harris, I think it was earlier today, rallying young voters in North Carolina. She's going to be in Madison later tonight with Mumford & Sons and I think Grace Adams and some other acts, again, rallying young voters. I wanted to start there with reproductive rights really square and center, front and center, top of mind for many young voters. Do you think that this strategy of the Harris-Walz campaign to try to do these direct appeals to young voters in swing states is a wise one? And what is Emily's List message to these young voters?
Yeah, I absolutely think that it's going to be a wise strategy from them. And I think they're really going strong with the young voters. We've said this before, we'll say it again. This election is going to be fought and won on abortion rights, and it's going to be won by women voters, especially young women. So I definitely think reaching out to young women voters and making sure they know the stakes, we've seen that that's really effective in swaying who they're voting for. Right now we have these stakes between Kamala Harris, who is fighting for their reproductive rights, and Donald Trump, who is trying to take it away, take us back, take us into the darkest parts of Project 2025. And so to have these conversations with young voters on college campuses, and we're seeing in North Carolina and Wisconsin, and really having the conversations about the stakes is effective. And I think we're going to see how effective it is after Election Day.
We know that women are accounting for about 55% of the early vote. I'm part of that 55%, got my early voting done this week. Thank goodness that weight is off my back. Don't have to worry about doing that. Why are we seeing the gender gap in early voting, which I think is really interesting?
Yeah, I am part of the 55% too. Make a plan, get your vote in. Early voting is great. I would say it's really encouraging. We're seeing women outpacing men for the early vote right now. Really encouraging statistic, especially because we know women are really drawn to Kamala Harris's message, especially around reproductive rights, as I just said. And so to see early vote, to see this early vote, that it is driving women and they're getting their voices heard at the polls, I think we're going to really see how effective that is when we get to voting day, as I said earlier.
Yeah, I really think, especially the early vote, and given what we think turnout may be for this season, for this election cycle, I always worry I always like to see really high turnout, but I worry that really high turnout days with lines at polls can be discouraging for working people and people that, again, hourly wage workers, women with family or other care responsibilities. So it's one of the reasons that I love to encourage people to do the early vote option if it's available to you. And it's unsurprising to me that women who have more care responsibilities than men, right, are engaging the early vote option. I certainly hope that it shows up in the results. I know Emily's List has been sending folks all across the country to the battleground states in order to knock on doors and speak directly with voters and to get out the vote, as we've been discussing. What are you hearing when you folks are door knocking, Sarah?
Yeah, so I've been on the ground. I've been in Nevada. I've been in Michigan. I've been in Arizona. And I think across the board, something that's really exciting for me, I've been doing field work since 2017. And this is my first presidential where I'm at the doors hearing reproductive rights is an issue that people care about, women and men. We're hearing it consistently at these doors. And it's something really special that
I can't hear Sarah. We just lost Sarah. So, Cardi, I'm just going to ask you, we can't hear Sarah right now. So I'm just going to jump in here as we reset. I'm not sure if that is me or going out. If you guys can let me know whether that's me or we're going out. So, Sarah, this is me back again. I'm just going to do a little setup of a question. I think we got a little trouble with the audio right now. But one of the things that I thought was a really interesting compare and contrast was the fact that Kamala Harris, in her appeal last night, during her closing address, if you will, her closing argument on the ellipse, made it very clear that she wants women to make decisions. She wants individuals to make decisions about what's best for them, not the government. In sharp contrast, Donald Trump, in his Allentown, Pennsylvania rally and address, I'm not kidding. You can't make it up. Asked women, does anybody not want me to be your protector? Like, that was his approach. And to me, those things stand in such sharp contrast, right? Here's a presidential candidate saying, I trust women. I think individuals in this country, men and women, need to decide what is in their best healthcare interests in consultation with their doctors, not the government. Donald Trump, on the other hand, is saying, you should trust me to decide what's best for you. I'm your protector. Your reactions to that contrast, Sarah? We still don't have you, Sarah. I'm going to apologize. As we get reset, I'm going to ask you to come in and rejoin if you can, Sarah. Folks, we're just working through a couple of issues here. So I'm going to keep talking about this. If you've got some questions, comments, et cetera, give us a call or a text, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. One of the issues that I wanted to touch upon today, in addition to this idea of turning out the youth vote and how important that is, and ensuring that all, not just young folks, but women that are motivated by reproductive rights and men that are motivated by perhaps their daughter's reproductive rights or their wife's reproductive rights, that everybody is indeed getting out to vote. Well, this only works, folks, if we preserve the right of people to vote. And I was absolutely flabbergasted this morning when I got a news alert that came across my phone letting me know that the Supreme Court of these United States has permitted Virginia to toss 1,600 people off of their voter rolls. And that really was truly shocking to me, because at the end of the day, in America, like voters should pick our elected leaders. It shouldn't be the inverse, right? Through gerrymandering or these voter roll purges. And since we're a same day voter registration state, thank goodness, here in the state of Wisconsin, we don't face this sort of Hobbesian dilemma here. What's going to happen to these 1,600 voters is that anyone who is properly registered, who is a citizen, who is registered, who is legally entitled to vote in Virginia following the Supreme Court decision, they are no longer going to be able to vote in the presidential election. Because in the state of Virginia, Republicans have been very effective at keeping Virginia from moving to a same-day registration state. So you had to have your registration in the state of Virginia well before today. So these 1,600 people, however many of them, are properly citizens and entitled to their franchise and their right to vote, are now robbed of their right to vote because of Republicans cheating in the state of Virginia and the U.S. Supreme Court standing idly by and allowing them to do so. I'm going to go to the phones. Well, let's see. First, do we have Sarah back? Sarah, are you back with us?
I think you have me back. I'm on my phone. Sorry, y'all.
These things happen, Sarah. We'll work through it. It's just live radio. Look, since we're talking about this and since I was sharing with people about the Supreme Court's decision not to step in to prevent registered, properly registered, legally entitled to vote folks in Virginia from voting, and there's been this voter purge in Virginia, what's the reaction of Emily's List and you, Sarah, just personally to this, I think, incredibly shocking turn of events here some 6 days away from the election?
Yeah, I mean, I think whether it's Republicans trying to run from their agenda, we've seen ballot boxes being burned, all of these things that Republicans really don't want people to vote. They know that women are turning out. We've seen the data. We've seen how electric voters are around these issues. And I think headed into this election, of course, folks don't want people to vote, which is why we're saying make a plan, get to the ballot box. Even Emily's List specifically, we're making sure women know that they can vote and it's not public. And so they don't have to tell their husbands, they don't have to tell their boyfriends, they don't have to tell their partners. Just getting out to vote and being able to vote for the issues you care about in this incredibly high stakes election.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible to me. Andrew from Maine letting us know in Virginia, the registration deadline is 22 days before the election. So why in God's green earth you would allow a voter purge to go into place after that registration deadline? There's a way to challenge individual voters. That's what should have been done here very clearly. Later today, folks, if you want to pick up this discussion with me here on Civic Media, I'm excited to share that we're going to be joined by Melinda Brennan, Executive Director of the ACLU. We will discuss this further. Let's get back to it, though, Sarah. Again, looking at these turnout numbers and looking at the importance of turnout, given all the voter suppression efforts that have been engaged by conservatives, given the fact that the entire door knock operation in the state of Wisconsin is being funded by Elon Musk, and that is not an exaggeration, like literally the entire door knock operation is paid for courtesy of Elon Musk for Donald Trump. When we look at this and these tactics over time, and you rate or we think of this election in sort of the arc of of civil rights and voting rights. Where do you place this election, Sarah, in terms of the importance of preserving these most fundamental rights, be they reproductive rights or voting rights?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the highest stake election of our lives right now. We have a candidate, Donald Trump, that has made it very clear in his arguments this week on his podcast on Joe Rogan, on at MSG. He's made it very clear the future that he wants for this country. He was praising authoritarian governments and on Joe Rogan's podcast just this week. And so he's made it very clear that he wants to take us back. He wants to do the darkest parts of Project 2025, and he wants to divide the country. And then we have a candidate, Kamala Harris, that has stood up to American voters saying she wants to turn the page on this extremism, saying she wants to unite the country with really positive language about what our future can look like. And so as we head into these last 6 days, I think the difference between these candidates is very stark. And it's very clear that Donald Trump wants to take us backwards, wants to take away these rights. And so we have to go to the ballot box, and we have to be talking to our friends and talking to our neighbors and talking to our family about these stakes. They're incredibly high.
Folks, that is Sarah Spain. She's the strategic communications director for Emily's List. We're going to come back with her. I've got some sound that I want to play you, Emily, when we return after we're going to take care of a little bit of business. We're also going to take your calls and texts at 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Before we go to take care of this business, Sarah, where can people find out more about what Emily's List is doing specifically and if they want to get involved?
Yeah, thanks for asking. You can go to www.emilyslist.org, where you can learn more about the organization and how to get involved.
Wonderful. That's www.emilyslist.org. Find out more information. You want to knock some doors, feel like you are doing something before November 5th. That's where you can find out more information. I'm going to be back in just a moment with Sarah Spain. We'll continue this discussion. Join it. 855-75-CIVIC. 855-752-4842. More in just a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Wednesday. We're in the 2:30 block, so it is Sounds Like Change, special guest spot that we host each week at 2:30 with Emily's List. Today, special guest is Strategic Communications Director Sarah Spain. We're talking about getting that vote out. We're talking about the importance and frankly, the evidence that women are showing up in potentially historic numbers. Very exciting. We got a caller that has a question or a comment. Annie from Watertown, say hello to Sarah. And what is your question or comment?
Hi. I sign my name for a lot of things. And I figure when I go to vote, I sign it, as a message, like an oath.
Yes.
I've looked through all the legislative stuff that I can find. Why are they trying to match signatures? There's nothing in there that says signatures have to match.
So here I'm going to give the practical answer, Sarah, if you've got any thoughts on this. I'm going to give you the practical answer to everybody that's listening that is voting absentee or in person early, which means you're going to be signing the outside of your absentee ballot envelope, your early voting envelope. Sign it like you usually do. Don't go fast. Don't be extra neat. Sign it like you normally do, your whole entire name. Oftentimes, there's all kinds of requirements in federal law and elsewhere. They may not specifically address signature matching, but they do address and require cross-referencing of people's identity. One of the ways to do that is cross-referencing or cross-checking signatures. Both, if you come in and you sign the poll book, it's checked. It can be checked against the signature on your absentee ballot. Driver's license checks, part of that is built into this system of checks that we have to ensure that legally entitled persons are the only persons that are voting. Sarah, any further comments on that question, which I thought was a great one?
No, I think that's great. You hit the nail on the head.
Just be very careful. Again, we've talked about this before. Best practices as we early vote, as we get engaged. Again, women showing up in higher proportions for early voting because, you know, we're the first ones to get some of our rights degraded, as we've just seen. Make sure you fill out those absentee ballots, envelopes that you're putting the ballot into. Excuse me, not the ballot itself. So fill that out completely. Double check the witness signature. Double check your address. Don't omit your zip code. Don't omit your state. Don't omit your city. Get it right. Double check. Charles from Milwaukee, you had a question or comment, sir.
My question is, so this morning I'm watching TV and I almost fell off the couch. How is it that they can continue to put out false TV ads that are not truthful? This morning I heard one that said Kamala Harris now is going to take away your Social Security. And then I had heard another one that said Tammy Baldwin has signed onto a bill that is allowing young girls to get mastectomies.
Sarah, you want to take a crack at this one, or would you like me to go first? Thanks for the question, Charles. I appreciate you.
Yeah, that's a great question, Charles. I think we see this a lot with Republicans. I always say that when they're lying on their ads, they're scared. We've seen ads recently, national ads, about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and abortion that they're putting up for Trump. And so my comment to that is when they're lying on ads like that, they're scared. And some of them are challenged, some of them aren't. That's election law and gets a little bit deeper, but I always say, like, don't listen to them and make sure to talk to your friends and family about why they're false and offer real policies that those candidates are offering. Maggie, back to you if you have any.
Yeah, couple of things here. Usually what you will see in the fine print in political ads is that they're not actually making the claim. They are effectively publicizing a claim or conclusion that has been made by a different new quote unquote news outlet or commentator, and they'll try to quote that. You'll see those citations in very small print. Now, what's interesting is that they'll sometimes selectively choose whom they're quoting. And here's the thing, both of those arguments are sort of shocking on their face. But the reality is that neither of those candidates ever took a position about the specific thing that the ad is claiming. It was part of a bigger policy discussion or bigger policy programs, which means if you take, and there are a ton of attack ads against Senator Baldwin relating to transgender care. Here's the reality. Tammy Baldwin doesn't want the government telling families what is the best health care for their children. And she has stood by legislation that reflects that value. That has been twisted by Eric Hovde and Republicans to say she wants kids getting sex change operations in schools. That's absurd. That's a lie. That is not what she stands for. But just like she defends women's reproductive rights, she also defends the right of families to choose the appropriate health care in consultation with doctors for their children. Sarah, we're going to have to leave it there. Sorry about our audio problems earlier. I can't wait to talk to you next week. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. We'll have some things to talk about. Well, hang in there, my friend. Thank you to Emily's List. Again, you can find out more at emilyslist.org. My name is Maggie Dawn. When we come back, it is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money. I got a great next guest. Her name is Maureen Kennedy. She's a philanthropist, knows a ton about tax policy. We're going to dig in, because if there was one issue to vote on in addition to reproductive and healthcare freedoms, it'd be the tax code. We'll talk about it when we come back here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. And I'm waiting.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.